Manx Radio Sport.
Well, welcome for the last time this season on Manx Radio AM 1368 to Saturday Sport Classifieds results reaction and analysis to the sporting action across the Isle of Man and further afield. And with this being the end of the current campaign, we've got our correspondents alongside us in the studio here to take a look through what has been another busy campaign across football, rugby and hockey across the respective competitions. But before all that, let's bring you for the final time this season the classified results for Saturday the 17th of May 2025. Those are as follows. With just the one game today here in football, the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup final, Ramsey 3, Laxey 0. So let's turn our attention then to what's been not just going on in football today, but across the season, and our football correspondent, Tony Meppham. Tony, very good afternoon. And I suppose given the nice weather we've had, it seems, at least from a weather standpoint, a nice way to round out the season.
Yeah, it's been absolutely superb the last few weeks. The pitch is a little bit hard, which has caused, I think, a few aches and pains for players. But we've still got two finals to go. We've got the Masters final tomorrow, 2:45 kickoff at the Bowl. And then on Monday, we'll complete the season with the Cal Cup, which is a great competition. It's for the under-21s. And that kicks off at 6:45 at the Bowl on Monday.
Well, before we get to what's coming up and looking, I suppose, back to the past a little bit on the campaign, let's look at what happened today, because, of course, it was an important day with the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup final taking place that was a repeat of the final 12 months ago. Ramsey taking on Laxey. Ramsey 2-1 winners the last time these two teams met in the final in 2024, and Ramsey have come out on top again. They're taking the Hospital Cup back to the Ballacloan Stadium. They've beaten Laxey today by 3-0, Tony.
Yeah, I think a fair result in the end. I don't think Johnny Palmer would argue over that. It was all just, the first 10 minutes a little bit cagey. But then once the game got going, I think it was 21, 22 minutes, it was a free kick. Dylan Pickles, a right free kick as well. And he's brought 25 yards out towards the left-hand side and he curled it with his right foot. And the goalkeeper sort of collected it but dropped it. And there was Tom Chattel there to finish it off to make it 1-0. And after that, it was, again, a little bit cagey between the two teams. Ben Wazza had a chance for Laxey, but it just went wide of the goal. But then a good time to score is just before the half-time whistle went, when Charlie Higgins, it was, who finished it off. It was down that right-hand side, and that's what Charlie does, just pick the ball up and spotted the chance and put a good leather behind it, and it went in to make it 2-0. Second half, you just hope that Laxey will be able to change things around, but they couldn't, and it was just, ball played through to Charlie, and Charlie gave it a little flick, caught out the goalkeeper. He got his leg to it, but he couldn't stop it, and over the line it went, so 3-0 it finished. Probably, it sort of opened up a little bit for Laxey when Dylan Pickles got sent off, because he got booked in the first half, booked for dissent in the second half, so the referee gave him a red card, and they were down to 10, but they covered that loss, and, Ramsey won it. And speaking to Johnny Palmer afterwards, he had no sort of gripes with it at all. He thought that Ramsey were the better of the two teams, and they go home with the trophy.
And on the occasion itself, Tony, cup finals in Manx football often well attended across the respective competitions. What was it like today down at the Bowl? I'm sure the weather helped.
Yeah, it was a really good crowd. It built up as the game went on, and the weather was outstanding. And on the far side, it was absolutely littered with people, as were under shelter. There's just one or two under there, just really sheltering from the sun, Rob. But all round, it was good. There's a lot of sort of banter going on between two sets of fans. But I think Ramsey won that one as well, to be fair, because the boys were well-tuned, and I just noticed it. And even before the game, they came down early and sat on the riverbank down at the NSC and had a couple of beers and something to eat, and then came into the stadium and voiced where they wanted the trophy to go. And the trophy has gone north, and I'm pretty certain that the town will be busy tonight.
May well be, but those two sides, so let's look at it from Laxey's perspective, not just the cup final defeat today, but beaten home and away by Ramsey in the league earlier this season. Of course, circumstances with regards to players and so on will have changed between then and now, but only 3 points separated these two sides in the league this season, Ramsey 6 and Laxey 8th. From Laxey's perspective, how do you think they'll view this season?
I think Johnny Palmer would be disappointed. I think, yes, one or two players have been missing here and there. Ben Wazza was playing for FC Isle of Man, and one or two sort of players. Joe Walters wasn't around, and they just haven't quite done it. I think Johnny will accept that, but I think Ramsey will probably feel the same, because their start to the season didn't sort of set anything alight, and they've sort of built momentum, but they've got some really good young players coming through there now, Rob, and Ramsey are going to get stronger and stronger, and they're very all on together, you know, big friendships there, and I think that's always important, because if they're happy in their play, even though maybe the results aren't going for them, then they'll just you know, keep chipping away and try and climb up that league. And you know, in the end of the season, they've had a really good run, because they're in the Cal Cup final on Monday as well, and it just shows you what a good supply they've got of young players coming through to match in with the more mature players.
Well, congratulations then to Ramsey, winners of the 2025 Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup, retaining the title that they also won in 2024. Well, let's take a look back then, Tony, on the season as a whole. It's been another long old slog, not just for us here at Broadcasting House, but no doubt for the players, coaches and fans alike throughout the season. But before we get to, I suppose, teams and leagues specifically, we've already mentioned the weather today. Yep. And over the last couple of weeks, that the Isle of Man has been blessed largely with some great weather, in fact. That was a massive factor in the last two seasons. I know you spoke about it quite a lot, that it caused some heavy disruption at times to the schedule. How has the schedule held up compared to, say, 12 months ago?
This is the best season ever, Rob. For rearranged fixtures at the end of the 24 game, where it's basically then we move into the Hospital Cup and Junior Cup, it's been brilliant. We had a great run. I think I had two fixtures to rearrange, November when the turnaround comes. And then we had that little bit of a bad weather after Christmas, and then up till sort of February. And then we've had outstanding weather, I think, right the way through, because, you know, football doesn't really like this, or footballers don't like this dry weather, because the pitches are hard. It hurts when you go down, you get sort of grass burns, and just the impact on your body is a lot different to when the pitches are a little bit softer. But yeah, it's the best season I've had as, you know, doing the fixtures. I've been very fortunate. But again, you know, Braddon have caused a few problems towards the end. Ramsey have as well, because they've been involved in a lot of things. It was the Junior Cup, the Hospital Cup, the Cal Cup. Braddon were involved in the Paul Henry. They were also involved in the Woods Cup, and also, you know, got battling for the league. So it was a real bit of a backlog for those two teams. But we've got there, and with the Masters tomorrow and then the Cal Cup on Monday, that's it, job done.
Indeed. Well, let's take a look then at the respective leagues. We'll start with the Canada Life Men's Premier League, and one obvious place it seems to start is, of course, Peel bringing the title back to the west of the island, as they did a couple of seasons ago. So what's been the key for Peel this season to getting things over the line where they couldn't get themselves ahead of the likes of Ayr United, the defending champions last season?
I think Ayr United, sort of November to sort of January, February, had a little bit of a dip in form. There were key players missing. Johnny Shields won. I think Sean Kelly was missing for a while as well. So they're two big, big players for Ayr United. But I think, again, with Peel this year, the younger players are a year wiser. And you can see just coming right the way through that the goals have been able to win and win them games. And when you look at Thomas Brown, he's been absolutely outstanding. You know, 42 league goals in a 24-league structure is something special. And I'm pretty certain that his name is kicking around for Player of the Year. He's certainly got the golden boot. And I'm delighted to say that the Isle of Man national team have got him in Orkney for the Island Games this year. And he's been the standout, I think, for Peel. But then when you look at other people around him, sort of Reece Oates, you've got Dan Pickering in there. Defensively, I think, was the worry for Peter Kenyick, the manager, but he's managed to be able to cover them cracks, and I don't mean that in a horrible way. You've got like sort of Dan Bell, who's come back in at left back, who's what, 39-40, I think it is. I might be doing a justice there. And Dan Bell, I know, is 36-ish or whatever. And Daniel Bell's been at Peel now as manager and as captain for a long, long time. And that's his first championship winning medal. He was absolutely delighted to get that last Saturday. So I think that's been the integration of the younger players in against the older, with the older players, and it's paid off dividends for them.
Yeah, we won't have time to go through every team across every division this evening, but I just want to touch on Ayr United. They were the defending champions going into this season. They missed out on the title this time, finishing second, but if you actually look in the last 12 months, there's still three trophies they've managed to secure. The Eric Fletcher Charity Shield in pre-season, the Plum Properties Railway Cup at the end of 2024, and also the 2025 ECAP FA Cup. I mean, they may be disappointed on how the league's gone, but that must surely be still considered a very positive season.
Very positive season. I've had many a conversation with Nick Hurt, the manager, and Nick has said that you know, they've been able to again bring players in, and they've been able to fill the gaps when top quality players have been missing. But I think Nick knows that at times where they needed the points for the league, they lost out on it, and they drew, 2-2 against Foxdale on Tuesday. So it just shows you what sort of a run-in they've had. But they've got good combination players there. But I think Air United know if they're going to sort of put a push on, I think certainly Corinthians and Peel next season, then they need one or two sort of players to come in and just cover the players when they're not available to allow them to come in and cover the spaces that have been left.
Well, from the top of the table towards the bottom, and of course two teams going down this season, Morown finished bottom of the Premier League this season, just the 4 points from 24 games for them. St George's, would have been hard to think for some people a few years ago to see St George's dropping down to the second tier, but they finished 4 points adrift of Onchan in 11th, who stayed up after promotion last season. What next for those two sides?
Tough one. Morown have got a lot to do. Obviously, they've just lost Kia Morris as well, who's one of the senior coaches. So David Bruce there. Colin Gilbert has come in and done a great job this year because Kia's not been there anyway. But, you know, the players are all behind them from what Brewer was saying. And, you know, all they can do is keep pushing on. St George's is a big, big sort of build job to go on there. Now, as far as I understand, Johnny Myers is standing down as manager, so I don't know what Johnny's got planned, whether he's just had enough trying to keep the team up. But when you look at senior players, Chris Bass, junior, you've also got Sean Quay and one or two others. From what I'm hearing is they're going to call it a day as well. So I don't see, with not having a combination side this season, 24-25, where the players are going to be. So I think it's something that St George's need to sit down and sort of work on as a club and see where they can go moving forward.
And indeed, just on that, you mentioned one name there, Chris Bass Jr. as well, also now having to manage player-manager commitments as well as the Isle of Man, for the Isle of Man men's national team, I should say, and of course the Ireland Games coming up this summer as well, so no doubt a big commitment. Let's turn our attention to Ardern and Drogheda Limited, Division 2, and Bradham, well, they finished Ardern and Drogheda Limited, Division 2 champions. They finished 9 points clear of their nearest challengers, Douglas High School Old Boys. Also went on to win the GH Call at Woods Cup on Easter weekend, and also earlier this week scored the Paul Henry Gold Cup as well. So I suppose the obvious question, Tony, is could it have really gone much better for Bradham this season?
Not at all, but they've been in this place before. They've won the treble before, and you know the players are there. They're good young players. Liam Kane, I believe, is not going to be available next season. He's finished second in the Silver Boot, so that's a big loss for him. But again, there's a lot of friendship in that team, and I'm sure that there'll be one or two younger players who used to play for Bradham may come back and sort of help them through. But Will Smith's done a great job, Greg Miller as well, the assistant, and just right the way through the season, they've been able to get out the players what they wanted. Okay, it's been a bit of a slog towards the end, but they've got themselves there, and they'll be looking forward to play against the big guns in the Premier League next year.
Yeah, immediate return to the Canada Life Men's Premier League. Well, joining them in the Canada Life Men's Premier League next season will be Douglas High School Old Boys, who, yes, lost out to Bradham in midweek in the Paul Henry Gold Cup final, but second in Ardern and Drogheda Limited Division 2 on 42 points, so 4 points clear of their nearest challengers, Colby and Ramsey Centre and Old Boys, who should probably get an honourable mention there for how they pushed towards promotion this season. Douglas High School Old Boys, Tony, it's been a couple of years since they were in the top flight as well. On the basis of what they've got this season and how they finished the campaign, how do you reckon they could potentially do?
I think they need to bring some players in, because there's one or two sort of players there. Martin King, fine, playing at the back, but Robbie Ward start picking up one or two injuries now. Chris Coxon's around there, and you know, Chris has come in and sort of helped them through, but they've got some good players in there. Discipline wise they need to improve a little bit. I think you know, one or two the younger players are a little bit sort of get carried away and get red cards and get bookings and get sin binned, and it could cost them dearly. But you know, you've just touched on Colby and Ramsey Youth Centre and Old Boys. Absolute credit to those two clubs for pushing all the way, certainly Ramsey Youth Centre and Old Boys, and it just shows, maybe not so much with Colby, but certainly with Ramsey Youth Centre and Old Boys, stand faithful with the younger players, and hopefully they'll come up with the goods for you, and they nearly did it this season.
Just to look at a couple of other Division 2 teams this season, for different reasons as well, there have been a couple that have faced challenges, and one of those, Douglas Royal, of course. So for a bit of context for those that don't know, they actually took voluntary relegation from the Canada Life Men's Premier League after last season due to a lack of players, so they went down to Division 2, allowing Marown a reprieve, who would have been relegated in their place. Six in Division 2. How has the rebuild, as far as you're aware, been, Tony, at Douglas Royal?
I think it's done okay, because when you look at the sort of signings that they made, sort of September-ish, improved them big time. Jordan Cowan's a good goal scorer, and he finished up their top goal scorer. You know, when you look at Simon Dooley around there as well, he was alongside him. So, yeah, it's just a question of Douglas Royal. We'll have a look and just see what players they can bring through. They've got a good team coming through. I think it's in the under-16s. Whether many of them turn 16 this season, I'm not too sure. But if they're playing in the final tomorrow, if they can get them sort of in the team and just be steady, just show patience with them, then I think Douglas Royal can march on. Great facilities, but it's just a shame that two or three really key players went to FC Alamann and two or three went to different clubs.
Two others that face challenges this season. One of those, Michael United, earlier in the season, there was a mass exodus of players and then a rebuild job that had to take place at Michael United. And the first team was still able to turn out every week. And also the combination side, who they were worried for, they got new players in. They've been able to fulfil a good amount of their fixtures. Not every single one throughout the second half of the season. But how big a job have Michael United had this season with what was such a huge obstacle to overcome mid-campaign?
I think it's a big job to take on mid-season, to be fair, because at the end of the season you get time to put things in place. But they were just sort of given this sort of mass exodus to try and deal with. And, you know, the FA gave them as much help as they could, as in, you know, time-wise, if they can't sort of field a combination team, it can't be helped. But a massive credit to Michael for just holding it all together. And, you know, when you look at another club that's involved in that league as well, is Maloo. It's a real hard slog, and let's just hope that they don't have the same issues next year. I don't think they will. I understand the reasons why it happened, and I get that by the club. But, you know, it's, you know, all the hard work that all the players committee put in has held it together, and I'm sure Michael will be fine.
You just mentioned one team that I was just going to come on to there, actually, before we just move on to the combination leagues. Maloo as well. So if you hadn't seen the news earlier this week, Maloo are actually begun their search for a new men's first team manager. They're inviting applications at the moment. Anyone interested in potentially applying for the role is asked to get in touch with Maloo AFC via their social media channels. But just to give you an idea of Maloo's position this season, finished second from bottom in Division 2, just 2 wins from 20 games. And it was tough towards the end of the season, Tony. They forfeited 7 of their last 9 games in all competitions. How tricky a situation is that to get around going forward?
I think it's very tricky for Maloo, because there's a catchment area around there. There's a lot of new houses being built, so whether they can pick some players up from there, but it's difficult. The committee's good. I think one of the senior members has stood down now, which won't help things, but I think they've just got to really improve you know, the appeal to the club, I think. And I think people know that, you know, one or two sort of players down there are very committed to their football, want to win. And sometimes it can boil over a little bit, and you've just got to stay under control, because, again, there's no point in having players and you're losing them through suspension many times. But they've struggled now for a couple of years, Maloo. So, you know, if the FA can help, but we can't sort of go and get a load of players and say, here you go, get on with them. We can only sort of guide them of where it can help. They've got a great pitch. Gary Gilbert does a tremendous job on the pitch. The club have spent money on the bar and done a really good job. And just all round with the dugouts and everything, it's just now they need to get players who want to play for them. And hopefully they can get that right, because they are one of the sort of, I think, wealthiest clubs on the island. Because when you look at the pitch and everything that they've done, they've had money to spend there, which has been spent in the right way.
Well, we'll just have a quick look through the combination divisions as well. Canada Life Combination 1, well, Onchan crowned champions this season, winning 18 of their 22 games, upsetting the order a little bit of the likes of Russian United in second and Ramsey in third, who were battling away last season. Well, Tony, Onchan Combination winning the Combination 1 title. Did you see this coming at the start of the season?
No, I didn't. And I know off air, Rob, many times we had a chat at the start of the season where Onchan were running away with it. And I just thought, this can't be sustained. And they did do it in the end, and they did it in style. And I was at Onchan's dinner last week, and the place was absolutely buzzing. And I don't know how many hours they were taking photographs with that trophy, but it's meant a lot to the club. And when you look at Onchan, they've probably got one of the best youth setups on the island now. You go Blackberry Lane on a Saturday morning, it's absolutely littered with cars. Some really good players there. I think Brian Callow was telling me something like 43 coaches they've got involved in the club. So that shows you how many junior teams they've got. And somewhere along the line, they're going to sort of be able to build a team that can sustain themselves in the Premier League. But, you know, this year it was a hard battle for them. Towards the end, they had to work hard to get the useful points to keep them up. Great club, well managed, great players in there. And I think certainly the combination side showed that they've got players there that can slot in that first team and help them.
Upsetting the established order maybe then a little bit towards the top. Rushen United and Ramsey once again back up there as well. Rushen United and Ramsey, would you? How confident are you, I should say, that Rushen United and Ramsey will be challenging toward the sharp end again next season?
They'll be there or thereabouts next year as well. They have been now for the last 2 or 3 years. It's always been Ramsey or Rushen. I think there's one or two sort of clubs who are starting to come up now. I think Peel will shape up to a good combination one side. They've got some good young players there coming through, and St John's have shown when they won the Junior Cup last week that they can sort of mix it with the big boys. And if they can sort of pick up one or two new players as well, their young players are starting to come through, then that can make them stronger. But you know, the combination is what it's there for. It's for the older players coming down, and it's for the younger players coming in into that first team, and it's worked well this season.
And just finally, Ardern and Drugan Limited combination 2, Colby winning and by a considerable distance. They were the first champions, league champions, I should say, to be crowned this campaign. Finished 14 points clear of their nearest challengers, Braddon, in second, and with a goal difference of plus 77. Colby combination were rampant this season.
Brilliant. And I watched their combi, and there's a lot of older heads there who put it all together for them. It meant an awful lot to the club. And when you look back over, what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, they were struggling for just one team. And here they are now bouncing back with a team that was pushing for top four and promotion in the first team. And the combination have walked away with the league. So credit to everything that's been sort of done at Colby. And when you look at teams chipping away there, you have Braddon, Ramsey, Youth Centre. Old boys as well were sort of involved in it. Then combination two has proved out to be a close run championship league again. It's always one of the most interesting in you know, Manx football, because it's where, you know, sort of your second division teams, the younger players are starting to come through their youth ranks, and they sort of probably come in earlier than a lot of other clubs in that combination area.
And we'd like to take a look as well as at the women's football situation on the Isle of Man as well. The likes of Peel and Corinthians battling away towards the sharp end of the competitions this season as well. But we also saw a different name getting into the headlines this season as well, because Malou winning the seven-a-side format Floodlit Cup competition that was introduced this season. And we also saw Malou taking on Corinthians in a later final as well. So, as we've seen for the last couple of seasons, Tony, Peel and Corinthians have been battling it out for the trophies there. But to see another name trying to get in there and maybe just upset things a little bit, that can only be good for the women's game, and particularly for a club like Malou, give them a little bit of encouragement going forward.
I don't think Malou need any encouragement, because, you know, when you look at them play, they're a good side. And when you look at the switch from sports, they still play hockey, but a lot of them have played hockey, still do, and they come across and have played football. And we changed the leagues a little bit this year. It hasn't worked. We've had a meeting already with the women's teams, and with two additional teams possibly coming in, Rushen and Union Mills. We'll watch that one, how it develops. But we're going to go, the Floodlit Cup will go back to 11-a-side, but we'll probably have you know, some 7-a-side competitions as well involved, just to give them the opportunity. But, you know, players now are coming from all round. I know Peel and Corinthians supply most of the island team, but now you've got Malou's players are sort of filtering through. You've got Onchan as well. And you don't want those players to be out of the Floodlit Cup because they're island players. So, yeah, we're going to tweak with it. There's going to be a bit of work on it over the next month. Jamie Lee Ferns, who's now the Women's Football Development Officer, is in constant contact with the teams just to find out where they want to go. We've had a meeting with them. I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet. And watch this space for the new structure of women's football.
And lastly, on the women's football side of things, you mentioned two teams there that are potentially looking to maybe get teams into the women's system, Rushen United and also Union Mills as well. If those were to materialise, how encouraging would that be for women's football as a whole? It's something we've covered quite extensively over the past few years, is participation and getting the numbers in there to keep it alive and keep it competitive, to have two more teams in there, how encouraging would that be?
It's huge, absolutely huge, and we just hope we can sort of pull it off, because the clubs have worked really hard at it. You know, when you look at Donna Harrison at Rushen, she's done a fantastic job, and everyone else involved. Union Mills, you know, were the top women's side quite a few years ago, and they're looking to start it again. But just all round now, you know, there's good numbers coming through, so it's getting them integrated into the women's game. But Corinthians have been on the other end of the stick as well, when they were just an also-ran team, and now they're one of the top teams. And it's, you know, it can be hard, but I just think certainly Malou have shown if you stick at it, it can come good. And by all working together and, you know, sorting things out and having the league programme like they want it, then it can only benefit them. And let's just see how it goes.
Indeed. Well, Tony Mappin, thank you very much indeed.
Manx Radio Sport.
Well, there's some reflection on the Isle of Man football season. We're now going to be turning our attention to rugby as well. Once again this season, we've had Isle of Man teams competing across in the English leagues as well. The likes of Douglas and Vagabonds on the men's side of things, and Vagabonds ladies as well in women's NC2 North South. Local competitions have also been continuing this season, not just those teams involved, but also the likes of Southern Nomads and Western Vikings throwing their hat into the ring as well in respective competitions. Let's take a look at how it's all gone throughout this campaign, and he's been loyally giving us updates as ever throughout the season, is our rugby correspondent Dave Christian. Well, Dave, it's been a while since we last had you on the show, a couple of weeks, and you've been obviously rooting through the wardrobe and found yourself a fantastic shirt to be wearing here in the studio this evening. But that being said, I do have to start on quite a serious question, to be fair. It's something we've covered quite a few times, is the situation with both Isle of Man rugby and rugby in general, and the system that is in place post-COVID particularly. How challenging overall does it continue to be, the landscape, to try and get rugby games on here on the Isle of Man and keep it competitive also across the water as well?
It's very difficult, Rob, as you've quite rightly pointed out. Post-COVID saw a contraction generally in the number of players throughout the United Kingdom. And I'm not going to say it's hit the Isle of Man disproportionately hard. It hasn't, because everyone else is affected too. But Douglas, Vagabonds, Southern Nomads and Ramsey pre-COVID were all running two teams. And now they're all running one team. Douglas maybe 1.5, Ramsey at a push 1.5, but everybody else is really struggling. And what's happening down below the senior men's game is that we've got junior teams pushing all the time. And Ramsey had a under-15s game this afternoon against Birkenhead Park. So the under-15s and Colts sort of age groups are pushing along kind of nicely, and the clubs are investing quite heavily into training in the junior areas to make sure that there's like almost like a conveyor belt of players that's dropping off two or three every year. And as those players come into the senior game, that will start to expand the player numbers, and hopefully we'll see things pick up a little bit.
And in terms of the cost as well, because particularly for the teams competing, I should say, in the English leagues as well, when I think to the likes of Douglas, Vagabonds and Vagabonds ladies as well, it doesn't come for free, all the logistics that fall into that category and fall into the week-to-week planning.
No, far from it. What we've seen this year is I'm not going to say a scandal, but there was a little bit of a mini-revolt down at Twickenham in relation to bonus payments paid to the senior executives. They hit performance targets. There was a bonus pot of about £1.5 million that dropped into the salaries of 8 or 9 individual officers. There was a bit of a kickback from the clubs. The details were leaked. The Daily Telegraph kicked up a bit of a storm, and it ended up with an emergency general meeting. The chairman of the RFU management board was pressurised. He resigned. Bill Beaumont came in as an interim fixer. Bill's toured the country seeking the views of clubs, and that resulted in a refocus of the community game, and what we haven't heard yet is exactly what that refocus will mean. It may mean there's some additional funds poured into the lower echelons of rugby, which may have some positive news for travel funding next season. But it's very difficult. I know, Ramsey, we've applied to rejoin the leagues. We're waiting a decision on that, but our conditions were we got no RFU funding and we had to pay the travel costs of the teams coming to the Isle of Man as well. So what we thought with RFU funding in there for the teams coming here, we thought that might do if we got maybe 40, 45,000 a season for travel. But that suddenly doubled when we had to fund the other teams as well. Now that this Beaumont initiative has had the refocus and the community game, we're hoping there's some additional funding. It also means that at the bottom counties three, ADM, Lancashire and Cheshire, there may be more clubs there that can sustain a 14-team league. You may have 15 or 16, and there's maybe an indication that there could be two mini-leagues. And that would be most suitable for Ramsey because it immediately reduces the costs. But again, that's all pie in the sky right now because we're waiting to hear back from the RFU, who, as a member, are not the most communicative of organisations.
But like you say, there's still a lot of unanswered questions there. But I suppose I could ask you, you know, if more support was to be made available to teams with regards to travel and logistics, in whatever form that may be, how crucial would that be for the sport, not just on the Isle of Man, but wider?
It's kind of it's a difficult question, Rob, from a Ramsey Rugby Club perspective. And as much as I try to stay neutral, that's my club. From a Ramsey perspective, it would be great because at the moment, the domestic competition, which we'll talk about very shortly, is not really enough. However, from anybody else left in the domestic competition, Ramsey's departure is not a good thing because that makes it even worse. So if you were looking at rugby holistically, an extra team joining the English Clubs Championship is a good thing, but it's also a very bad thing too. So I would think the effort would be made at the Murrick Park that if a first team was going to join the English Clubs Championship, we'd be making sure we got a second team in the local competition.
Well, we'll see how that unfolds. And, well, we started on a very serious note there, I think it's fair to say, on the rugby side of things. So let's turn our attentions to what the teams have achieved throughout the season. And logically, it seems, we'll start with the Isle of Man's highest-ranked side, Douglas, competing in Regional 2 Northwest. Now, this season, for those who haven't been following Douglas, they finished sixth this season, their highest ever finish in Regional 2 Northwest, winning half of their 22 games and losing the other 11 as well, only finishing just a few points in the grand scheme of things outside of the top five. So, Dave, from those you know inside the Douglas setup, how are they viewing the achievement this season?
Very positively. Of course, they lifted the Manx Cup end of season as well, so it's a big boost for them. They were struggling a little bit early on. Big signing for them was Nathan Robson, who moved from Ramsey to Douglas. No disrespect to Brendan Kelly, who was wearing the 9 jersey at Douglas before Nathan moved. But Nathan is a different animal altogether. Not only can he do 9, he can play in 10. He can kick goals as well as being a fantastic scrum half. He was a big signing for them for a very small man as well. And he's an incredibly nice, quietly spoken chap too. So not only is he a good guy, but he's done great things this season. Another guy was Blake Everson. He's turned up. I'm not sure where he came from. Playing in the back row for them. He's a small guy, but a terrier over the ball, and he's winning stuff at turnover all the time. Yes, they've got the big hitters, Liam Kirkpatrick going off the back of the scrum, the skipper Blake Snell from the second row, two massive ball carriers there. But those two little guys, Blake and Nathan, they've done the job for them this season. Douglas just need maybe one or two players maybe next season, and I think they can start worrying the promotion places.
And just to look at some numbers alongside what you've been saying there, they finished sixth. So just ahead of them was 8 points ahead was Burnage. But one thing you kept pointing out during the season was the amount of bonus points that Douglas were accruing as well. So try bonus points, Douglas picked up 11 and 2 losing bonus points as well. So for those who don't know the system, could you just explain what that maybe tells about a team, even if they're not winning?
Well, the first important one of those numbers is a losing bonus point. You get 4 points for a win. If you score 4 tries or more, you get an extra bonus point. If you lose and finish within seven of the other side, you pick up a losing bonus point. So there are two games there where Douglas have lost by just one score. And that makes a huge target for the coaches next season. You can turn those two losing bonus points into 2 4-point wins, and they're there at the next spot. 8 points, you said the gap was to fifth. That's how small it is. Just two more wins, and it might be looking a little bit different. To get to the guys at the very top, you've pretty much got to have the same team home and away, week in, week out. And consistency in team selection is so important. But they're a little way off, maybe the top two, but it depends on what players they come in next season.
OK, that's Douglas. Let's turn our attention to Vagabonds, a tough campaign for them this season in Counties 3, ADM, Lancashire and Cheshire. Again, for a little bit of context, at the end of last season, Vagabonds had been previously relegated down to Counties 4, ADM. That was during the last campaign, and at the end of the last campaign, it was that the decision was then taken that teams from Counties 4 would then be combined into Counties 3 due to a lack of teams for what would have been Vagabonds level. So Vagabonds ended up effectively going up a league back into Counties 3, ADM. Finished second from bottom this season, just the 4 wins from 22 league games. So what could Vagabonds have really done in their situation, given they're coming up against teams that were supposed to be, I guess, the league above them before the leagues merged?
Yeah, it's very difficult, and it's not just Vagabonds either. We've seen that Vagabonds finished up in a 14-team league, but there were actually 16, and they had an unusual way of working out at the start how it was going to finish. We've had two teams pull out.
Yeah, just for a bit of clarity there, both Blackpool and Old Bedians both dropped out mid-season.
Yeah, and that shrunk it back into a 14-team league. But because they were planning something different at the beginning of the season, when the 14-team fixture list was finally released, Vagabonds had a game every weekend from Christmas to Easter.
To just point out, just for clarity, it was 14 teams. It went down to 12 with Old Bedians and Blackpool pulling out.
Yeah, so it was very difficult, particularly post-Christmas. Next season, I don't know. The best player for me this season has been Tom Gascoigne. Tom tells me that this was his last season, although everybody says they all say that. There'll be another at least one or two in him yet. But he'd indicated that it's his final season. And he wasn't even playing every week, to be honest. He was in and out because his job puts restrictions on when he can and can't play. Daniel Bonwick, the captain, another important player, he picked up a couple of knocks during the season, and he didn't complete all his games either. So if he's becoming a bit more injury prone and they're going to lose Tom Gascoigne, it may give them problems. And the other big news that came out this week was the team that finished below them, Oral, have just appointed a new player coach, a gentleman by the name of Denny Solomona. He's a cross-code rugby union, rugby league international who finished his playing career at Sale Sharks. He's going to be here in
Counties. Quite a pedigree.
He's going to be here in Counties 3 ADM next season.
Well, just a last question on Vagabonds before we take a look to the other teams as well. With all those in mind, the challenges and potentially players departing in the summer as well, to put it quite bluntly, would Vagabonds benefit from the league's reshuffling again?
Potentially, yeah. And we know that the UK clubs aren't going to be keen if Ramsey were admitted to the competition. They're not going to want to come to the Isle of Man twice. So some sort of split league at Counties 3 and making it 2 8-team leagues would probably suit Ramsey and Vagabonds better. It's less attritional to start with. With not having to play a game every week from January to Easter, which was a real burden for them. You can split the games out a little bit more evenly and allow them time to, if they wanted to, boast the fixture list, play in the County Cup or Bowl or Vase or Plate or whichever one it was. They've also got the Papa John's Cup, which they would be eligible to enter if they wanted. And, of course, the Manx Cup, which was a bit harum-scarum at the end of the season, having to play midweek games to fit them all in. And if Vagabonds were in an 8-team league, we could get some of those games played a little bit earlier too.
Well, we're going to stick with Bala Fletcher because we're going to turn our attention to Vagabonds ladies competing, women's NC2 North South, finishing fourth, winning 5 of their 10 games this season. And once again, Dave, there seems to have been a really positive atmosphere around the team, the Vagabonds Ladies team, after it underwent quite heavy changes. Not this season just gone, but the one before as well, with a couple of players moving on as well. But so, how are they viewing how the campaign went?
They're an enthusiastic bunch. It was the end of the Women's Six Nations a couple of Saturdays back, and they were all out in Ramsey of all places, so they wandered into my local, and always gives the place a little bit of a buzz. They're all happy, they're all smiling, they're singing, they just have an amazing amount of fun. And when you just look at the girls before, during and after a match, they really are committed to 100%, and it doesn't matter whether it's the warm-up, the game itself, or the post-match festivities, they're in it, and they're in it for the long haul. Fantastic bunch of players. Some great stars popped up out of the woodwork. Maitlin Campbell is one of them. She scores, tackles, does a massive job for them. And her, Leona McGovern, Becca Hicks, and Maisie Murray have all been given the nod from Cheshire. So they've been travelling over to play Cheshire women's games as well. So it's great to see the younger players coming through. Maitlin has been amazing this season, but one player that's a little bit underrated maybe is the 10 jersey, Becky Dunn. She's been pulling the strings from that 10 jersey. I think Lauren Ellison had took a break for a child, and Lauren's back in the frame now, but they've left Becky in at 10, and she is doing a fantastic job. She gets that back line moving. You've got some big runners in the middle and some quick girls on the outside. They've got a good team going forward. They could be challenging for promotion next season.
Just to add a stat before my next question, in terms of the league, Vagabonds, in terms of points scored, 371. Only the actual league champions, Lee, scored more throughout those 10 games of the season. But one thing that seems to have been the case at Vagabonds as well, that they've been quite proud of as well, is not just the atmosphere within the team, but I think you alluded to it a little bit before as well. They've been bringing new faces, not just into the team, but into the sport as well. That seems to be a big weapon in their arsenal almost, in terms of the longevity of that squad.
Yeah, definitely. Maitlin Campbell, for example, her father Ben played for Douglas and for Southern Nomads. I was talking to Ben on the touchline, and he said he'd been nagging her for years to try and play rugby. And in the end, she finally gave in, went and played, and came back and said, "Why didn't you nag me harder? This is brilliant." So she's great. She's got a nice rugby pedigree there as well. And they're a great bunch to work with, great bunch to socialise with. And I'm chatting to them via Messenger and sending them action photos that we've picked up from the touchline. And the girls are great. They are just so enthusiastic. It's unbelievable. You have to go and watch them to believe it.
OK, let's turn our attention then to the other local sides here on the Isle of Man. First of all, Ramsey, who, Dave, you've mentioned already, and the situation going forward with applying to the English Championships. But, of course, there was the drama a couple of weeks ago with regards to the Manx Cup competition. Now, they beat Vagabonds in the Manx Cup semi-final and released a statement before the game, actually, for those who hadn't seen these updates, that regardless of the results, they'd be pulling out of the Manx Cup and Manx Plate for the remainder of the season over what it described as concerns over player safety. You can see Ramsey's full statement on the matter and their reasons that they give behind it at manxradio.com. You can also see the response that Manx Radio received from the Manx Rugby Executive Committee, the overarching body that looks after rugby matters here on the Isle of Man, to that situation as well. But Dave, with that situation for Ramsey, I know we covered it quite extensively at the time as well. What precedent, if any, does this set for next season?
None at all, really. We had the same issue in 2018. And Douglas didn't put a first team into the competition then. They put their second team in, who won the Manx Cup in 2019, of all things. So it didn't make any difference for Douglas. What it did mean, though, was that the games were a little bit more meaningful locally. Ramsey aren't saying that Douglas were unsafe to play against, and they're not saying that rugby's unsafe. They just felt the gap in the playing standard was a little bit too much, and it was the players who made the decision. It wasn't the management. The players made that call. We had our annual dinner last week, and the chairman, Billy Neal, said he couldn't believe how brave they were to make the decision. And if you look at those results from the Manx Cup, Douglas beat Vagabonds 84-5. They beat Southern Nomads 64-0. They beat Ramsey 50-5. And then they won the final 74-19. Ramsey had the lowest losing margin, 45 points. But nobody was anywhere near it. And the club is wanting to say, I guess, is that you need to have a bit of a rethink here because the competition just isn't fun. Yes, it's great that Douglas won it, and fair play to them, they're the better side. But it's got to mean something a little bit more for everybody. And when you go through your qualifying stages and your smallest winning margin is 45 points, it kind of underlines how strong Douglas are. And, you know, fair play to them.
But just on another side completely for Ramsey and the fact that you've already mentioned previously, you know, applying to join the English League structure, if that was to be successful, how exciting a prospect could that be for Ramsey?
Well, it for me personally, not very exciting at all because I have to do all the travel planning. but for everybody else, yes. Ramsey played in the leagues from 2008 up to 2019. One league title in that year, a couple of promotions, a couple of relegations. It was all good. I wouldn't say it was a treadmill, but fulfilled every fixture. Didn't have any issues at all. It was only post-COVID that we didn't feel able to rejoin. The demands on the cuts in travel money that the RFU had put in were just too big a chunk for us. Pulled out and now kind of left out on a limb. And the domestic competition with Southern Nomads, Western Vikings as well, is not really providing the number of fixtures required. As an example, Ramsey have an international ticket allocation for Twickenham of 21 tickets per game. That's determined by the number of 15-a-side matches that's played. It's being cut to 16 next season. And those things have an impact on your supporters and your members as well. And we've pointed this out to the RFU. We put a letter into Bill Beaumont just to say, look, we're withering on the vine here and you're kicking us while we're down. Obviously, that we factored into all the various discussions that are going on. And it's a very similar position for Southern Nomads. And to be fair, for Ramsey and Southern Nomads, they both made the finals of their respective Cheshire Cup competitions. We had a great weekend at Chester Rugby Club. Unfortunately, no silverware coming back to the Isle of Man. Southern Nomads were beaten by Port Sunlight, and then in the following game, Ramsey were beaten by New Brighton. But both clubs had a massive day out there at Chester, both well supported. Everybody had a great day.
And just lastly, must mention as well, one of those that you've just mentioned, Southern Nomads and Western Vikings as well. They've certainly played their part throughout the season. We must say that as well. So for Southern Nomads and Western Vikings, what's the future for them over the next 12 months, do you think?
It's going to be difficult. Southern Nomads have got a great guy in the back row, Max Elwig. What a player. He's a doctor at Nobles. They're not sure if he's going to stay any longer than the end of this season. If they can keep him on the books, he's great. Real poacher of the ball, athletic, gets around the park, reads the game well, knows his stuff. What competition that's likely to be in is going to be very, very difficult. I know there's a strong view at Ramsey that if the first team goes into the English Clubs Championship, we're going to have a second team out on the field.
Dave, thank you very much once again.
Manx Radio Sport.
Well, finally tonight, we're going to turn our attention to what has been a hectic but a very fruitful Isle of Man hockey season across 2024 and 2025. The mixed and indoor leagues took place from September to December, and then at the turn of the year, it was the turn of the men's and ladies divisions at both senior and junior level as well. Not to forget, of course, we have had national teams competing at both senior and youth level in the respective England Hockey Championships. To go through what we've seen throughout this campaign, he's been waiting patiently as ever. Only has to do it for this one final time this season, our hockey correspondent, Ben Cunningham. Well, Ben, so much to get through. Let's start with what happened in the mixed leagues this season from September to December as well. Again, actually, just before we get to teams, I suppose, more specifically, and leagues more specifically, again, hockey fantastically represented on the Isle of Man. Four full divisions in mixed hockey again this season.
It's been brilliant. The numbers have been really good in the clubs. The clubs have been able to get at least three teams out in most divisions this year, which has been really great to see. And yeah, it just shows that Manx hockey really has got a place on the island.
Let's take a look at the leagues then. Mixed Premier League, Bakayoko taking victory in the Mixed Premier League this season, winning all 10 games, scoring 53 times and conceding just 11 goals. They finished 4 points clear of their nearest challengers, Vikings A. On the face of Ben, obviously a lot can happen over the summer before the next mixed hockey season comes around in around September time. But just on the basis of that, it looks like other teams could have a big job on their hands to try and dethrone Backers next season.
Absolutely. Like you say, the amount of goals Backers scored this season and then the goals that they conceded, it just shows just how strong they are going forward, but how strong they are defensively. And like you say, most teams in that league really had a challenge to try and get a goal past them, but a few teams did. But again, they were just too clinical going forward. I mean, when we watched them most of the season this year, they were just so clinical going forward and they punished.
And at the bottom of the table, Valkyries B were sadly relegated, weren't able to win any of their 10 games, so a tough season for them. Replacing them for next season will be Castletown Southerners, who won Mixed Division 1, so we'll have two Castletown teams in the Mixed Premier League next season.
Absolutely, and it's going to make things really interesting going into that next year. Of course, Castletown Celts finishing 6th out of 8 in the Premier League, and then Castletown Southerners taking the crown in Mixed Division 1. But of course, remember though, Castletown Southerners weren't leading that division until the last three weekends of the season when Backers C messed up.
Castletown Southerners, the winners of Mixed Division 1, Vikings D relegated with just the 2 points for them. In Mixed Division 2, Harlequins B were promoted and Valkyries D dropping down into Mixed Division 2.
Yeah, and a really successful season for Harlequins Mixed B, winning Division 2 after just being promoted from Division 3 last season. And then going on to winning the bowl as well in the mixed competitions. It was a phenomenal season. I was at the Harlequins Awards night last night and it was really well celebrated, their achievements from being promoted just simply from Division 3 up to Division 2 and again straight up again to Division 1.
Yeah, high-flying at the moment, Harlequins B, making their way through the divisions from Mixed Division 3. No relegation, of course, but success for another Castletown club, Castletown Cosney winning the league.
And this went right down to the final day of the season. I remember me and you talking about it on Friday Sport Preview that there was so many ways that either Castletown Cosney could have took it or Vikings E could have took it or even Backers D could have took it. But Cosney came out with it just by 1 point ahead of Backers Mixed D.
Well, those are the mixed divisions. Turning our attention to the men's and ladies leagues, which took place from the turn of the year through to last month. The men's Premier League, will start with that one. Backers A crowned champions only just though, Ben. They only beat Vikings A on goal difference. Vikings A beating them on the last game of the season, but Backers A's goal tally, 63 goals this season. That really paid dividends.
Absolutely, and it just goes to show that goal difference can be crucial in the leagues. Yeah, and this really proved it on the final day of the season. Of course, Backers went into that final game against Vikings A, 2 points clear, but Vikings A took the win, which then put them level on points. But Backers' goal difference, again, far more superior to Vikings.
And Valkyries B, they were relegated from the Men's Premier League this season. The Ladies' Premier League, meanwhile, Castletown A coming out on top, an undefeated season, winning 9 of their 10 games and drawing one of those. Great season for Castletown Ladies A.
Absolutely phenomenal season. I know the Castletown Ladies A captain, Sarah Farragher, who stepped into that role just this season, will be over the moon with how the team has performed. Again, look at the goal difference, look at the goals scored against them. It was crucial and it just shows how clinical they've been all season. And like I say, they'll be absolutely over the moon because, okay, they dropped 1 point and that was to Backers A in the league. But then in the cup, in the final, they beat Backers A.
Yeah, just proving as well this season that a good defensive record is just as important as having a clinical attack as well. Men's Division 1 and 2, the winners of both of these both had undefeated seasons. Vikings B moving up to the top flight, winning 9 of their 10 games and drawing 1. And also Valkyries C winning Men's Division 2 just out of Vikings C. So two undefeated champions. That'll fill them with confidence, surely, for next season.
Absolutely. And I mean, Vikings Men's B took that title on the last day of the season by beating second place Backers Men's B on the final day of the season. So congratulations to them. They'll be looking forward to being back in the Premier League next season. For Valkyries C though, just pipping Vikings C to that promotion by a point. It was so close when them two sides met every time in the league. And of course, it was just as close when they met in the bowl final and it went to penalty flicks. And who came out on top? Falkirk SC.
And just before I move on to the next observation, without looking at the notes in front of you that I know you've got, Ben, there was only one team across the men's and ladies' leagues that managed a perfect season. Do you know who it was?
I think it was Backers Lady C.
Incorrect. Oh. It was, in fact, Castletown Ladies B, who won Ladies Division 1, winning all 10 of their games, scoring 50 goals and only conceding 2. That is a phenomenal season.
I tell you something, you've got some good stats there. Yeah, absolutely. That's phenomenal. I mean, to just concede 2 goals is incredible, and it's going to pay good dividends going into the Premier League next season. Of course, they were relegated last season, so they're straight back up, which is just what they wanted. But can they keep that team together?
Yeah, it's a strong statement. And just finally, Ladies Division 2, it's Backers C who'll be heading up with their 16-point total, taking over to Ladies Division 1. Good season for them.
Absolutely. I know they were gutted that they had to concede that last game of the season to runners-up Valkyries Ladies C because they just couldn't field the team due to availability and injuries. But a real successful season for Backers Ladies C. They go into Ladies Division 1. Let's see how they perform there.
Indeed. Well, those are the domestic campaigns that happened in Isle of Man hockey this season, the mixed and also the men's and ladies' seasons as well. But we must not forget as well, the Isle of Man had multiple national teams competing across the senior and junior categories in the England Hockey Championships this season. Ben, one that stands out must be the Isle of Man senior ladies B team, only beaten in the final of the women's EH Tier 3 plate by Sunbury and Walton Hawks on penalty shuffles. Cruel way to decide a game, but they must be incredibly proud of how well they've done and how it showcased Isle of Man hockey.
Absolutely. It was an absolute heartbreak to lose it on penalty shuffles. I know, speaking to the manager there, Kim Carney, she was absolutely gutted, and she said there was tears at the end of the game. Emotional scenes, as you can imagine. They were so unlucky. They went 2 up and things were looking so good. But then just a little slip up, and it gave their opponents the chance to equalise and get the both goals back to make it 2-2. Take it into the flicks, to the shuffles, and unfortunately, just on the shuffles, they just couldn't finish it.
No doubt some valuable lessons learned from their trip to Lee Valley from that one.
Absolutely.
Well, Ben, got 30 seconds here. Just another quick word. I know we've covered it a few times over the course of the season, but Manx Hockey Association has always pointed out just how grateful it is to the volunteers, the likes of the umpires and also the technical officials as well, who've once again made sure all the games go ahead, and there's always a lot of games.
Absolutely, and yeah, big shout out to all the umpires, everyone on the Hockey Association that's been involved this season. It's been a massive effort, and we're pleased to say that everything ran smoothly. And on behalf of the Manx Hockey Association, we'd like to thank Manx Radio for all its support as well.
Thank you very much. Well, Ben, it's been a pleasure as always, and we will no doubt, of course, be catching up with you for the next hockey season coming up in a few months' time. Well, thank you as well so much for joining us here on Saturday Sport Classified in what is our final edition of this programme of the current season. We'll be back at the start of the next campaign in a few months' time. Meanwhile, enjoy the rest of your summer, and also enjoy the 2025 Isle of Man TT races. Just 9 days to go until racing returns on the mountain course. We'll now be handing back over to Manx Radio Gold, but from us, until next time, it is bye for now.
Manx Radio Sport.